Hey y'all, it's Dr. Samina Rahman, Gyno Girl. I'm a board-certified gynecologist, a clinical assistant professor of OBGYN at Northwestern Feinberg School of Medicine, and owner of a private practice for almost a decade that specializes in menopause and sexual medicine. I'm a South Asian American Muslim woman who is here to empower, educate, and help you advocate for health issues that have been stigmatized, shamed, and perhaps even prevented you from living your best life. I'm better than your best girlfriend and more open than most of your doctors. I'm here to educate so you can advocate. Welcome to Gyno Girl Presents Sex, Drugs, and Hormones. Let's go. Hey, y'all. It's me, Dr. Samina Rahman, Gyno Girl. Welcome back to another episode of Gyno Girl Presents Sex, Drugs, and Hormones. I'm a board-certified gynecologist. I'm here to talk to you about everything you need to know to help you to live a better life. I have my own practice in downtown Chicago. I specialize in sexual medicine and menopause management, and I'm currently in the middle of transitioning my insurance-based practice to a concierge model to be an affiliate of the amazing Ms. Medicine model of concierge doctors. So working alongside amazing Dr. Lisa Larkin and many other doctors across this country to provide care outside of the restrictions of insurances, to be honest. But anyway, also working on many other chapters in my life that I hope to keep you guys informed about as they evolve. But I'm super excited because I finished this discussion with an amazing virtual friend. My husband jokes I have so many virtual friends. He calls me a friend slut. But he was like, but I have all these virtual friends that I've met through social media and conferences and other platforms. And it's so enriching to be a part of this community of clinicians who are really trying to better serve women and educate and part of this movement, honestly. But part of the movement from down under is the awesome, awesome Dr. Fatima Khan, who is a sister from another mister. She is pretty cool. I have not had the pleasure of meeting her in person, but have spent time, with talking to her previously and, I've been following her on social media, and she's in our little menopause thread that we have. That we communicate with. And so one day when she comes to the States or I go to Australia, we will meet in person. She's an amazing doctor in Melbourne. She has her own menopause clinic there. She's a leading perimenopause and menopause doctor. She combines a holistic approach with clinical expertise to offer treatment solutions that support your mental, physical, and emotional well-being. From hormone replacement to non-hormone therapeutic options, she's tailored her approach to ensure a more comprehensive model. We talk about her journey into menopause medicine. We talk about really treating perimenopause in ways that a lot of people miss the mark. And so she is a true advocate for women. I love everything that she's been doing. She likes to educate as well as she educates along with me. She regularly appears as guest across many platforms, podcasts, radio, and television programs, and she shares the latest insights and research into an undervalued and misunderstood area of medicine. When she's not busy supporting patients, she's educating fellow healthcare professionals about perimenopause and menopause and teaching at the University of Melbourne Epworth Clinical School. And Dr. Fatima can be found raising awareness on her social media platforms. And following her move from London to Melbourne in 2019, she founded the Menopause Clinic to share her extensive knowledge with those who need her the most. She has an extensive history. She was at the Imperial College of London for her Bachelor of Science. She did her medicine at the Imperial College of London as well. She did her diploma at the Rural College for the Rural College of OBGYN as well. She's been a clinical fellow at King's College in London in reproductive endocrinology and gynecology and menopause. And she also has an advanced menopause certification through the British Menopause Society. And she's on the faculty of sexual and reproductive healthcare. She's pretty cool. So I hope you guys enjoy this podcast. Let's get at it. Hey, y'all, it's me, Dr. Smiedermann, Gyno Girl. Welcome back to another episode of Gyno Girl Presents Sex, Drugs, and Hormones. I'm Dr. Smiedermann, and I'm super excited today to introduce you to a new friend, a virtual friend I hope to meet one day in person. But we've met through online activities, and we have a lot in common. So as you heard in the introduction, she's an amazing menopause specialist, and we're going to get into some interesting talks today around perimenopause and all the things. So welcome, Dr. Fatima Khan, the menopause specialist on Instagram, all the way from down under. What time is it for you?
It's Monday morning, 10:30 a.m. And okay. I understand it's Sunday evening, 7:30 p.m.
Yes. So, for me. Yes. So there we go. We finally did it. This has been like, I don't know, 6 months in the making or something.
Yes.
Because of the time.
It's always a bit tricky, but thank you for sacrificing your Sunday evening to have.
Thank you for your Monday morning. So,
yeah.
I follow you on Instagram, and now we are, you know, we're in a little menopause group. We talk all the time, but I want the listeners to understand, you know, like who you are, how you came to this interest in perimenopause, menopause, because obviously everyone enters this as clinicians in a different way, and none of us really get the training we need in the States, and I understand it's the same in like UK and abroad too, although it might be a little bit better nowadays. But so tell us like how you got into this and where you are right now with your private practice.
So, you know, it's interesting. I was telling someone I've been a doctor for 18 years and I went to medical school 24 years ago. So
yeah,
I might look not as old, but I am pretty ancient in kind of the medical world.
Wait, so you graduated in 2001? From medical school, 2001?
I graduated in 2000. I started 2001 and then I graduated 2007.
Oh, okay.
So in the UK, we go at 18 and then you do 5 years undergrad, MBBS, and then you do a year of intercalated BSc. So mm-hmm. I did pharmacology and therapeutics. You did 6 years at mm-hmm. Imperial College in London. And then I obviously, like most women, loved obs and gynae. And so I was going to do obstetrics. Mm-hmm. Absolutely loved obstetrics. But in back in those days, you would literally start your on call like 18 hours a day, wouldn't go home for 2 weeks in a row. And I got married when I was really young. I got married at 30 of medical school.
Oh, wow.
So we're celebrating our 20-year wedding anniversary this year. We were on our first year.
Yeah, amazing.
And I think what happens is like he was doing emergency and I was doing obstetrics. And we just found out we just wouldn't see each other.
Yeah.
And so I was like, okay, what can I do, which involves obstetrics, but also gynae, because a lot of the women on the gynae on call, by the time they were getting to emergency, they could have managed a lot of the women's health in the community much better.
Yeah.
And so when I was doing gynae clinics, I was like, hang on, but this could be done in the community. Why do you need to wait and to see a specialist in the hospital? So then I kind of did a bit of community obs and gynae and then decided I'm going to do what general physician or GP after 5 years of training, and then decided very quickly I didn't want to do that and did emergency medicine and looped back into doing specialist training in menopause. So in the UK, you've got specialist training. It takes a year or 2 years, mm-hmm. depending on how advanced you want the training to be.
Yeah.
So I did that. I started in 2017. I actually even went to the US to learn about hormones and longevity, and then mm-hmm. went into learning about HRT, but in the UK, it's a multidisciplinary clinic in the public system. So okay. you work with a hematologist, a urogynecologist, and so we would see high-risk women with like, you know, IBC filters, pulmonary embolisms, yeah. and thrombophilias, yeah. and women yeah. who wouldn't be able to have HRT in the community. We're very mm-hmm. lucky in the UK, you've got clear guidelines, so the straightforward cases would be started. So my training was,
I do. I love the British guidelines, actually, the British Menopause Society. They have very clear guidelines. Yeah.
Yeah. So they've got the NICE guidelines, which are available for every physician to start HRT on, but the complex cases. So when I did my training, it was an advanced certificate, which allowed me to then, you can go independently, set yeah. up a menopause clinic and accept referrals. So I started doing that 2017, 2018. So I've been doing it, you know, for 7, 8 years now. And then I moved to Melbourne, Australia in 2019, just before the pandemic, and then set up a clinic here. And again, it's multidisciplinary. I work with a hematologist. I work with a laparoscopic gynecologist. Mm-hmm. So I do the hormone replacement side. A lot of my work is with gynecologists because, as we were talking about, a lot of the women would present with gynae issues like heavy bleeding, fibroids, adenomyosis, and all those things. But I think over the eight years, you learn the nuances of managing menopause. And I always say 8 years ago, you would see menopause. You would see women who present with 12 months of amenorrhea. They come to you. They'll have the classic symptoms. You give them estrogen, progesterone. Mm-hmm. I mean, most physicians can do that. I think there's been a big shift in this perimenopause, and it's getting younger and younger and younger. And so perimenopause normally would be women who are skipping periods, is the transition leading up to menopause. But now we're getting women on a monthly cycle and still wanting to take HRT. And I guess we don't have the guidelines, because if you look at the straw classification, it starts with this delay of 7 days or more. And I guess we probably need to understand the nuances of a woman presenting with perimenopause. Mm-hmm. When does it actually start? It's not really when you see a shift. And what are the symptoms initially, which are very different to menopause? And number two, how do you manage it?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we should get into all that. I mean, I feel like a lot of my listeners are clinicians, and I mean, a lot of them are looking for help too. But like from a clinical perspective, I feel like the perimenopause transition is the worst part, right? Like it's like, I mean, I'm in the middle of it right now. It's hell. I mean, it's like, and I can't, you know, and I do this for a living, and I'm trying to figure out like, oh, maybe I need less estrogen right now, because I'm sure if I, you know, if all, I wish we, like, I think Rachel Rubin was saying, like, if only we could do a continuous glucose monitor that's with the hormones and see what is happening with our estrogen. I mean, you know, technically we're not supposed to check hormones all the time, but we know that the shifts are so dramatic in perimenopause that if the average age of menopause for, you know, Caucasian women are 51 and a half, but we have to talk about the South Asian thing too, but you know, let's talk about, you know, where you see perimenopause age-wise, you know, and what are the biggest symptoms? Because, you know, I'll tell you what the ones that I hear the most, but I'm curious to think what you feel like. I mean, they're probably the same, but.
Yeah, I think number one, we need to start with the nomenclature, right? So at the moment, it's menopause at 12 months of amenorrhea, but it's cessation of your menstrual cycle.
Right.
But essentially, there's no more eggs to produce.
Right.
And if you look at, for me, I think we need to redefine perimenopause by not just the menstrual bleeding as a pattern, because a lot of the women would have hysterectomy, have marinas. So we're losing this big chunk of menstrual bleeding history.
Yep.
So we've got to, and also by the time you get the menstrual changes, the hormones are already fluctuating. So I don't think it accommodates for those changes.
Yeah.
And so for me, it's okay. Well, if menopause is cessation of your periods from ovarian function or failure, no more eggs, then we know there's a dip in ovarian activity and quality of eggs around 37, 38.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at the recent data that's coming out, they'll say that's when perimenopause starts. But the symptoms are not hot flushes, night sweats. And if you look at the normal menstrual cycle, the first follicular phase is estrogen going up, mid-cycle you ovulate. Now, at ovulation, you release an egg. We all know that. But then the whole point of that progesterone peak that you would get in the luteal phase is to support implantation of the embryo. Now, we're not interested at 37, 38. There's a decline at fertility at 35.
Yeah.
And 37, 38 is the shift where the progesterone kind of goes a bit flat. And women will present to you with three presentations. Typically, when the progesterone goes down, you'll either get heavier bleed. So they're still having a monthly bleed, but the period is heavy. So you're not getting that endometrium with the progesterone, but the estrogen is still obviously building up the lining, the follicular phase.
Yes,
so for me, the very early perimenopause starts late 30s, and they'll come to you with monthly bleeds, but they'll tell you they're getting a heavy period, they got clots, or they're flooding. Now, there's three kind of characteristic symptoms or points I normally talk about perimenopause. So the first thing, they'll have low iron because they've got heavy bleeding. When you have low iron, you'll have fatigue, reduced exercise resilience, breathlessness, dizziness, fatigue.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to get that iron up. And most women are roaming around with low irons. And more and more data is showing it causes brain fog and insomnia as well.
Yeah.
So that's the first thing they'll present to you. They're feeling tired. They're feeling exhausted. The second thing is when you lose progesterone, I'm talking endogenous progesterone, which is a GABA stimulator. So that's a calming neurotransmitter in the brain. We lose two things. You don't get deep sleep or deep REM sleep. So suddenly women are getting poor sleep, disturbed sleep, and they're not waking up refreshed with the background of low iron. So now you see they're fatigued, they're exhausted,
yep.
they're not sleeping well.
Yep.
And then the third thing is you lose that calming effect in the brain. So you lose the anti-anxiety effect. So now you've lost the sedative effect, you lost the anti-anxiety. So the typical features that I've seen for 8 years is fatigue, insomnia, anxiety. And a lot of the time we look at it from the reproductive lens and we don't talk much about the role of natural endogenous promethium or progesterone.
Yeah.
And everyone is focused on estrogen, but actually the early perimenopause woman will present with fatigue, anxiety, insomnia.
Absolutely.
And when you don't sleep, we don't restore and rejuvenate. So they feel even more exhausted.
Yep.
In the background of low iron and anxiety. And now this would be fine if you had two generations before you would have your kids at 20, at 45, you know what? You can have flooding and hemorrhage because your kids are at college and you can afford to like be at home, take your time, have an afternoon siesta.
Yeah.
But that's not the case. The average 40, 43-year-old has got three kids under 10 and she's working full time.
Yep.
So her general baseline cortisol drive is high. So the compensatory mechanisms aren't there.
And you throw in there like the sandwich generation where you might be managing like family members that are ill or you're the primary caretaker for everyone, then that's, you know, like a real shit show.
Yeah. So, I mean, the typical, you know, 40, early 40 woman has got three young kids. She's working full time and she's also got elderly parents, most likely with Alzheimer's. So now you've got a situation where you're feeling fatigued, you're not sleeping, and you're feeling anxious all the time. And we know a stress would exacerbate these things. So background cortisol from lifestyle responsibilities will affect your sleep, will make you more anxious. Mm-hmm. And then in the background of when you're supposed to be performing, you can't. I think it's also important to realize that I personally think progesterone is what we need to replace in the luteal phase. So suddenly the first thing what happens is we see their bleeding is controlled. They're sleeping better. They're feeling calmer. They're coping better. I always screen with three questions asking about the three B's of estrogen excess because we know you have unopposed estrogen. And I think for practitioners who are starting to use a lot of estrogen, you've got to be careful in that early phase because you have these massive peaks. If you look at any kind of data point, progesterone declines first because we're not trying to produce a baby.
And more steadily too. Like it declines steadily, not as...
So estrogen, if anything, you kind of get this kind of higher levels of estrogen because the FSH is telling the brain to produce more. So you actually, we have to see double, triple amount of estrogen.
Right.
Now you've got to think about unopposed estrogen on the lining where you have to have risk of endometrial hyperplasia. So you've got to make sure you're looking after that. Everyone knows I'm obsessed with the lining of the uterus. And so some women will find that they will need either a DNC, they might need a polypectomy, or they might even need a Mirena. Now, I know some people hate the Mirena, but I think for a lot of women, it's life-changing.
Life-changing.
Because at this phase of life, it offers them contraception, but also that endometrium control.
Yeah.
And you can still add in the natural progesterone on top, micronized progesterone, which will help with the sleep and the anxiety.
Yeah.
Typically, I find going back to asking the questions, if they've got too much estrogen, I always screen by asking them, have you got breast tenderness, breast enlargement, bloating, fluid retention, and heavy bleeding?
Mm-hmm.
So if they're getting that, that already tells them they've got sufficient estrogen.
Yep.
And we know when the estrogen is fluctuating, you can get hot flushes, night sweats from tachyphylaxis.
Yeah.
Sometimes women will say to you, they've got hot flushes, night sweat. I'm like, okay, tell me more. And they'll say, oh, I've had a heavy bleed. I had clots dripping down my leg. I had breast tenderness. And the SDR is running at 3,000.
Yeah.
And so it's really important to actually just not focus on hot flushes, night sweats. You've got to look at the whole body.
Right.
And we also see this unopposed estrogen on the breast where women start presenting with lots of cysts.
Yes.
Because I do lots of breast imaging for women.
That's true.
So I think when we think about unopposed estrogen and perimenopause, not just in the endometrium, thickening it and putting you at risk of hyperplasia, you also need to think about the breast as well, overstimulating cysts. Now, that doesn't mean it causes cancer, but we don't want to be overstimulating. We don't want painful breasts that you can't wear your bra.
Yeah.
If they're having to go and buy a new bra or they can't hug their children or change, lying, turn around in bed, too much estrogen.
Right.
So I normally look at, I would normally screen and then I might add a very low dose estrogen.
Yeah.
But typically, if they're very early perimenopause with heavy bleeding, I'll do micronized progesterone luteal phase and then add in testosterone. Now, it's really important to know that I don't know where this came from, but testosterone does not go down suddenly after menopause.
Right.
It starts to get peaks in our 20s.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes down in our late, kind of, I would say mid to late 30s. Right. And typically a lot of my early 40 patients or late 30s have almost no testosterone. Agreed.
Yeah, it's so true.
Now, if you go back to the same, you know, you've got a lady in front of you, she's coming and telling you she's fatigued, she's overwhelmed, she's exhausted, she's got brain fog. So testosterone is very good for three things. Of course, it's licensed for persistent low libido postmenopause. Using in perimenopause is unlicensed. However, we know it helps with emotional resilience. Mm-hmm. In some women, it will help with brain fog and mood. Just like men, it helps with mood, lifting mood, helping mental clarity, helping their muscle mass, helping with metabolic syndrome. I think it has a similar effect. Of course, you need to replace in a physiological range. Right.
Which you can do readily in Australia. I was going to say, it's easier to do in Australia because you guys have andropheme. We have to be creative.
We're very lucky. We have a TJ proof, but you have to understand it's only licensed for postmenopause.
Oh, I see.
And so we obviously, you know, using testosterone perimenopause is off-label. Yeah. Anywhere where you use it. But in the perimenopause, you know, we in the UK, we've used it for things like not just low libido, but for fatigue as well. And I think we need to have a paradigm shift by using more micronized progesterone and testosterone in that early perimenopause transition.
Agreed.
And estrogen comes a lot later. And the hot flushes and night sweats come when they're very low. Actually, before that, you start noticing the periods become lighter.
Yeah.
They might tell you they're getting menstrual migraines. They might get more arthralgia or joint pain. You have to be careful about joint pain. You can get them even with high estrogen. Mm-hmm. And similarly with dry eyes and dry skin, I've got women coming in with like 4 pumps of estradiol and their estrogen is through the roof and they're flooding. Too much estrogen can also cause this kind of dry, itchy skin and dry eyes as well.
Yep.
So testosterone is what helps those women because we know testosterone helps with meibomian glands. It helps with dry eyes as well. So I think we've got to explore in the early perimenopause more of this testosterone, progesterone role by adding in estrogen later. But everyone is focusing very heavily on estrogen without kind of understanding what's actually happening in that ovarian lifespan in the woman's life.
I agree. I think that's actually a wonderful summation. We have those patients that really do well with oral micronized progesterone, the Prometrium, which is body identical. And we know that there are those patients that really, it's like a life-saving thing for them. But there are a subset of women that we always talk about who have a sensitivity to progesterone, right? Like they're the ones that you might see who have worsening irritability, they have worsening bloating, they have worsening sleep. What do you do for those patients that, you know, when you're thinking about, I mean, obviously, if it's the bleeding issue, we can address. But when you're thinking about supporting that perimenopausal transition and that stuff doesn't help them.
I think so. In my experience is the community who are sensitive, they tend to have underlying traits of either ADHD, neurodivergent minds, and there's a lot of background of PTSD, PMDD, and ADHD, just a cluster.
Yep.
And they've got this kind of GABA sensitivity in the brain where they either become really anxious, really flat, or actually get paradoxical insomnia from taking micronized progesterone.
Yep.
Those women, obviously, we probably have to go with non-oral routes because there's normally the allopregnanolone from the liver metabolism that they get this very potent effect.
Yeah.
Vaginal bypasses that. Mm-hmm. So they'll get the endometrial protection. Of course, vaginal Prometrium is off-label for perimenopause and menopause use. Or we think about things like the Mirena. Again, they'll find that helps them. And in those subset of women, they again will find the testosterone helps.
Yes.
Because the testosterone is very useful for PMDD, PMT, endometriosis. They tend to have low levels of testosterone and they don't tend to tolerate estrogen or progesterone, you'll find.
Yeah.
And I think we're going to find more and more women insensitive to estrogen and progesterone, despite it being body bioidentical, and the role of testosterone in these women, because it helps with this resilience to stress. A lot of them will say they feel calmer, the premenstrual symptoms feel calmer. They get this mental clarity if they've got that ADHD picture. With the PMDD, it reduces that irritability. It helps them with their sleep, helps them with the vaginal dryness. You do get some aromatization into estradiol. Mm-hmm. But if you're replacing in physiological ranges, you don't see that, obviously. Mm-hmm. But obviously, if it's too much testosterone, then you can get breast tenderness and breast enlargement. So you just got to keep an eye if someone is either overweight, if they've got a lot of fatty tissue, you can get this aromatization in adipose tissue leading to breast tenderness, breast enlargement. Yeah. So you just got to keep an eye on that and bleeding as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel like, you know, testosterone, you know, on social media can be so triggering for so many people, right? Because there's so much, you know, obviously we know based on our consensus guidelines that, you know, for hypoactive sexual desire disorder, this is like the go-to. But you and I both see this in our office. Like we see it all the time where people are like, oh my God, my brain fog is better. Or like, I have the most clarity. I feel so much better. My mood has improved. You know, we all know that this is affecting our brain. So, you know, we see it. So that's what oftentimes what I'll tell patients is like, what we know is that it's for hypoactive sexual desire disorder. That's what it's sort of approved for in this perimenopausal. And not, I would say like based on our consensus guidelines and research, but anecdotally, we see patients all the time with these symptoms that are improving.
And I think you've got to realize guidelines are there for safety. And I think as long as you are practicing individualized medicine, you've got a woman in front of you and you've got a baseline, which is undetectable or very low. Yep. You're replacing in physiological ranges. You do a trial for 3 months. And if they get benefit, great. And you keep an eye on that. If they don't get benefit, then you don't do it. Right. You know, we use, I think there's so much research that needs to be done, especially around that perimenopause and the phase around the role of testosterone. There's lots of data coming out on endometriosis. And obviously, a lot of my patients have endometriosis. Yeah. But part of my understanding is, I guess, going back to the progesterone again, we need to understand that we now, I'm seeing more and more progesterone insufficiency. Yeah. So the hallmark of premenstrual tension and perimenopause is progesterone insufficiency, which happens, number one, from anovulatory cycles, because we're not trying to have an egg's not pumping out every month, and also you're not going to have lots of progesterone. I'm also seeing now in younger women these premenstrual symptoms and the perimenopause being exacerbated because of the whole mental load from the sandwich generation. Mm-hmm. You've got chronic, so daily micro stresses. Your entire cumulative load of stress is so high that your hypothalamic adrenal axis now is activated chronically, which means we know that chronic stress will suppress your LH surge. Yep. And then you don't produce as much progesterone. And evolutionarily, that is to keep you safe. Right. You know, if you're in caveman days and there is no contraception, you can have sex, but you're not going to get pregnant because we don't have enough progesterone to implant that embryo because it's about survival. It's about human species being continued. So they need you to procreate. Yeah. And so we're seeing that. That's where if you look at infertility and subfertility is rising, not only because women are having kids later. And of course, again, we know that that progesterone's not there. But we got to understand that women now, even in their 30s and 40s, I'm seeing this premenstrual tension and PMD, and a lot of it to do with this progesterone insufficiency. Mm-hmm. We're getting more and more heavy bleeding, insomnia, fatigue, and mood disturbance because we're losing that relaxing, calming, anxiolytic effect, the sedating effect of natural progesterone. And natural progesterone is the first thing that will go down when you've got chronic stress. And on top of that, when you have excessive screen use, which we know the blue light will stimulate cortisol and further keep those cortisol levels high. And you see that women will come to you. They'll tell you they can't switch off. They're on all the time. They're in the sympathetic drive. Yeah. So I'm seeing more and more a shift in the last 5 years of this nervous system dysregulation where women are stuck in this sympathetic nervous system with just not being able to bounce back into a rest or repair, relax phase where, because you can't, you start your day in the morning, you do the lunch boxes, you run, you're thinking about what you're going to cook for dinner, you come home, and physicians are more at risk of burnout than amongst other professionals like lawyers.
The chronic to-do list. We have a chronic to-do list in our head.
Yeah. And a lot of my patients will then say, oh, then I'm like, you know, we do it scroll because that's scroll. That's the only thing that calms us down, but that's pushing the cortisol up. And then you're trying to sleep and you can't sleep because you need at least, you know, a good 2-3 hours of no blue light. You want to relax, but you can't relax because you're thinking about the mental load. And most women are preparing their next day to-do list while they're sleeping and waking up at 3 in stress.
Like, I forgot this. That happens to me all the time. I forgot to do this.
Yeah. So yeah. I think all the myconized progesterone will buffer a little of that cortisol. We know that it's so GABA is like having a glass of wine or a diazepam or Xanax, right?
Yeah.
But we have to always focus on the fundamental pillars of good health. And if you want to support your hormone health, you need to think about good nourishment through lots of protein and fiber. And a lot of us, especially physicians, are on the go. Black coffee, croissant. Mm-hmm. Sandwich, not eating, and we're not getting our fiber, we're not getting our protein. And we know that your insulin resistance gets worse, not just through fluctuating estrogen level, but when you've got poor sleep, that's an independent risk factor for type 2 diabetes and insulin resistance.
Sure. Yep.
And you all get that through stress and low progesterone.
Right.
And then secondly, when we are eating on the go, our body's general ability to maintain those blood glucose are reduced because we have less muscle mass as we get older. So now we're not sleeping. We have high cortisol. We have reduced muscle. So we don't buffer that glucose as well. And then you tend to gain weight, but also the mood fluctuates as well.
Yeah.
So you've got to start, you know, at 35, looking at making sure you're having those lovely, nice protein breakfast with fiber in it and fat in it. And that's a typical time most of my patients won't have. They'll have a black coffee, shooting that cortisol through, then they have something on the go, pick up a cookie. And we just neglect our health because, number one, we don't have the knowledge or education.
Yeah.
And number two, we don't understand things like how does estrogen, progesterone, and cortisol interact with insulin and blood glucose.
All the hormones, right?
The movement we need to change. Everyone is doing this crazy exercise in the treadmill. But again, that's a form of physical stress and it puts this further burden. Now, if you're someone who's feeling refreshed after your run, great. But most of them I speak to, that's not the case. They're feeling exhausted to even walk, let alone run. Yeah. And I think just saying, okay, let's do 20 minutes of resistance training every other day. We're getting some core stability work with really kind of focused Pilates. And so changing that, and having a really good sleep ritual, like for me, magnesium is a must.
Mm-hmm.
Micronized progesterone is a must.
Sure,
I tend to have no blue light. I put my phone in the study. I mean, two nights I might scroll on the weekend. But generally, I have this thing around 9 o'clock or 8:30. There's no blue light. All the lights start going off. I have a candle on and I'm starting to now snooze. I read a chapter or a book. And then I think you have to cultivate practices to support these things because modern life is detrimental to your hormone health. And because everyone else is doing it, everyone is struggling. And I think the final one comes to stress reduction because we do passive stress reduction, which is doom scrolling and watching Netflix. But actually, you've got to do active relaxation. That might be either for some women having a nice bath. It might be doing a little bit of yin yoga stretches. It might be doing breath work. It might be doing meditation. Something that is actively communicating with the mind, I'm not stressed because the brain is going 105 mile an hour. And you've got to tell it, no, I'm okay. Yeah. Either you do some deep belly breathing, which we know stimulates your vagus nerve.
Yeah.
And I think the more we focus on vagus nerve work, which comes to, you know, your rest and repair, you'll find you'll sleep better. Your hormones react better as well.
Yeah.
Well, I think you can do HRT, but you need to do the other four pillars as well.
Right. It's a tool in the toolkit.
If you're not doing them, you're not going to see the difference. So all my patients who come, you know, and we haven't even talked about alcohol, because as you know, if you choose to drink, you just won't sleep. And we see that obviously the liver, the alcohol dehydrogenase is not the same quantity, is not there, it's decreasing. So its ability to clear the alcohol is reduced and hormones are metabolized to the liver. So then you have more premenstrual tension. And most women, if you tell them, I tell them to do a liver detox because it sounds cooler than saying don't drink alcohol for the first few months or when I give them any form of hormone therapy, because I want them to sleep. I don't want them to get premenstrual mood disturbance. And I'll tell them to try and not eat after 7 p.m. and focus on really those four fundamental pillars. No caffeine after midday. Try and eat some good protein, fat breakfast. time-restricted eating is a lot better than fasting, because fasting puts a lot of, especially in perimenopause, postmenopause. If you look at the fasting data, it comes from postmenopause, because when hormones are fluctuating, we have fluctuating cortisol levels and fluctuating glucose level. You need to support that.
Right.
And when you fast, postmenopause, it's fine, but in peri, it's too much stress for most women's body.
Right.
But you're better off having, if you look at most of the data with time-restricted feeding, which is circadian fasting, essentially eating within daylight hours, that is better rather than starving till midday and then eating at midday and then eating till 9, 10 p.m. So I normally encourage that.
Like, stop eating at least 2 or 3 hours before you go to sleep is what I tell people, like, you know.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I normally say, you know, try and eat in daylight hours. I mean, and the reason is, if you look at Sachin Panda from Salt Lake City, he's done a lot of research around circadian rhythms. And he's done, you know, if you give the same diet to people who eat within daylight hours, sunrise to sunset, and the same diet, who, if they start eating at midnight, midday, and go all the way to, say, 8, 9 p.m., they just put on weight purely because they're eating later. And that's because our insulin is more sensitive in the morning. So a.m. and afternoon time. So I don't think you need a massive breakfast. I just think if you're going to eat your complex carbohydrates, which are important, like sweet potato and complex grains, they should be eating during the daylight hours, just because you metabolize the glucose much quicker and clear it than in the evening. And so I think you've just got to look, you see, just giving them progesterone issues is not going to help with their weight, their mood, their anxiety, their sleep. They're always going to be unhappy. And I think we must, as practitioners, educate them on all of these things, because they'll come to you and say, I've been doing this in my 20s and 30s and it's not working, because we don't have the education on how we need to shift the way we move, the way we eat, the way we sleep. And I think part of stress also comes from not just actively relaxing, but also, I think, stepping back. And we're conditioned our 20s and 30s to keep saying yes and overcommitting. No. But I think for me, the most liberating thing is stepping back and saying no to a lot of things. And it's like, actually, no, I'm actually going to spend more time. Just, we don't have to be on the go, because it can be quite stimulating to be that adrenaline and cortisol and socializing and meeting. And I think that's important, but I think we need to be more intentional and more intentional around our interaction and social interactions, which are around meaningful conversation. Is this fueling up our bucket rather than hanging out with people and doing things which are draining us? You know, so for me, when I see someone, or if I do something and I feel really exhausted, but I'm not getting joy from it. I mean, of course, we all have obligations, but I just think we just need to step back and journal and really reflect on what we're doing and be a bit more intentional. And that's one of the good things, I think, when you're entering this phase. It's just kind of, if you lean in and do the inner work, you'll find the transitions a lot better. Because I think a lot of the issues are not just hormones, they're stress and our life responsibilities and the people around us who exacerbate the journey as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we have to be very intentional on who we choose to interact with and give our energy to, because some people are just suck it all up. And, you know, we were talking about earlier, like, some people just take and take, and then other people, you know, are really contributing to your wealth, your well-being. So I feel like you're totally right.
Well, I guess we're just conditioned to people please. And we do that, you know, in your 20s and 30s, you say yes to people, you want to be seen. And I think you've got to look at it as a transition, not just in a neuroendocrine and hormonal transition, but also I think you're evolving into the person that you want to be. Before this, everyone is so busy with ticking the boxes. You go to uni, you get a job, you get married, have a partner, have kids. And if you continue on that path, you start becoming quite resentful and angry and upset, because you're pouring from an empty cup. And I always say, you know, Ferraris are very fast cars, but if you're driving at 120 mile an hour doing, you know, 20,000 mile every week, the engine will wear out, right? It has no more to give. And so it's a similar thing with this transition. Not that we're Ferraris, but, you know, I think you get to perimenopause and there is no fuel in the engine. It's just, you've got to either reboot it, and you've got to do the things which are serving you, and you can't pour for an empty well.
Absolutely. So, and I feel like that's why... Right. And I think when women realize that, they find this period of time so liberating, right? Like, once they're like, you know what? I don't have to do this. It's like, you know, big F you to everyone else. I'm not doing it kind of thing. And they feel like very liberated by it.
Yeah, they're liberated. And I think you start, I mean, we all have values that shift as we get older. And I think it's important to reevaluate things that are important to you. Where do you want to invest your time and energy in? Be a bit more, you know, I mean, for me, death, proximity to death is a good reminder of being intentional.
Mm-hmm.
I think just thinking that we're not here for long and we can get so busy with just ticking boxes rather than being intentional every day and serving what serves us and the people around us, what's important to us. It's quite, you know, you see a therapist, see a counselor, see whoever you need to see, work through a journal. And what is it that you want to do now? It's a very good time in your 40s to be like, where do I want to spend my energy? You've got teenage kids. They're going to go off to college.
Mm-hmm.
You know, work will always be there. How can we, there's no balance. I hate the word balance.
Yeah, me too.
It's where am I going to put less energy? So, you know, wherever you focus, your energy will flow. And if as long as it's something that's bringing you joy, and even the difficult things in life, I think you've got to think of as like with every adversity, it's an opportunity to grow and learn from it in life, in careers, in relationships. And I think the more you lean into that, the more you're likely to grow and become more. You've got to approach it with curiosity.
Yeah.
And if you don't do it with that lens, you're going to get a bit very angry because we're used to controlling things.
Yeah.
And in perimenopause, everyone is trying to control their work, control the kids, control the husbands, control our aging parents, and control this transition we have zero control over.
Yeah.
Letting go can only happen when you understand. I think the uncertainty of it brings a lot of fear, and that's what we want to control.
Yeah.
But if you're going to try and control this phase, you're going to be very unhappy.
Yeah.
And very angry.
Right.
With the whole world.
Don't you feel like that's one of the most common things you hear is that I'm just so irritated all the time, or I'm so angry all the time? Like, I feel like that's one of the common symptoms that people come to in this transition. And it's because of all of what you're saying, right? Everything that you're saying.
So irritability and impatient comes from this heightened cortisol sympathetic drive, right? So it's just, we just don't allow ourselves to recalibrate into parasympathetic.
Mm-hmm.
System, because we're going from on. And it served us well, as I said to you, in our 20s and 30s, but it's not going to serve you well. I've got a 13-year-old teenager. I just, from one of my letting go is, do not go into a room and tell her to tidy the room up, because that's...
It's
like, you know, she's in an amygdala. She's not in a prefrontal cortex. She's not processing any rational, logical thing.
Yeah.
And I think the women think that they're older kids and they should be sensible, but actually they're going to make the most irrational, silly decisions because they're not rational.
Yeah.
They have this massive recalibration happening. Mm-hmm. You need to support them. And if you try and have, you know, we have challenging times, but you've got to try and connect rather than control teenage kids.
Yeah.
I'm learning all the time. Mm-hmm. Similarly with your husbands, and we have a dog too.
Yeah.
So I think for me, it's about connection over control.
Yeah.
I'm a type A personality from birth.
Yeah.
But I'm having to learn to really let go of control and try and connect more and understand more and be more curious and as to, you know, how I respond. But I utilize a lot of acupuncture and Chinese herbs and breath work and yin yoga and all those things, because I think the biggest issue now is taming that nervous system.
Yeah.
You know, the antidote to stress is your parasympathetic. You can either do gargling, you could do singing, you can do deep belly work.
Yeah.
Hugging is really good. You know, we don't have the oxytocin anymore. We don't hug anymore.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even doing this, you know, that's why hugs help us do that. It's the antidote to stress. I was listening to a really interesting lecture, like evolutionary, what would happen is you would get pregnant in, you know, in your teenage years, and you would just have like 8 to 10 babies. There would be no contraception. So you'd either be pregnant where you have high levels of progesterone, or you'll be holding a baby where you get a lot of oxytocin. So women have conventionally, the stress biology is not used to what we have now in modern life, which is a lot of them may not be having kids. So they basically don't spend time getting pregnant or have the oxytocin. And I think generally speaking, we don't generally connect with hugs and kisses, with people around us that much.
Well, yeah, the social media and messengers and text messaging, like, yeah.
You know, like the other day, I sent someone a birthday gift and they just text messaged me back instead of saying, you know, let's meet up for coffee and give a hug. You know,
yeah.
we just,
yeah,
it's just go on Amazon, send someone a gift, do this. And I think we miss those sitting down, the energy that we get, the reassurance. We're tribal human beings. We need people around us.
Yeah.
Now, we don't need the wrong people around us because they can be sources of stress.
Right.
But I just think you've got to find what works for you.
Yeah.
And I think for me, one of the things that I try and educate women on is working on that nervous system, because irritability and impatience is the first sign that you've got heightened sympathetic nervous system. And we know that what is hot flushes and night sweats and perimenopause, yeah. and rage comes from this. You have these high cortisol.
Right.
It's an inflammatory, we get autonomic dysfunction happening in perimenopause because estrogen is stimulating in the nervous system with background cortisol. You're losing your progesterone, which is the GABA. So you don't have the inhibition of that nervous system.
Yep.
So now you've got these high estrogen and perimenopause with lots of stress, then lots of coffee, then alcohol. And you're no wonder that we're a mess. Yeah. And so I work with a lot of, you know, nutritionists and naturopaths, and because I think we need to really support women in managing stress. You can't tell women it's a stage of life and you've got to put up with it, because obviously you can't, you know, you've got your work, you've got your kids, you've got your parents. But what you number one have to do, make them aware.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you've got to make them either find a way that is helping them reduce, having tools and things that support them. You know, I started transcendental meditation earlier on this year. For me, it's been life changing.
Yeah.
I've got to make a conscious effort every day to do something to help with that. Stimulating of the parasympathetic. That's the only way to relax your nervous system. But also, when you're in chronic stress, your perimenopause journey will be far worse than someone else who isn't.
And, you know, our phones don't help anything, right? Like, it just puts us into this chronic, you're right, the doom scrolling, the chronic stimulation, the chronic stress from...
Well, it's a cognitive overload. So not only you've got a cognitive overload from work, then you've got a cognitive overload from children and family, and then the phone. So I think going back to that intentional thing, just put phone away. I have it on silent. When I'm meeting a friend, I actually never put it on the table. I put it in my coat. It's so nice to be present. You know, I was finding like my brain was always distracted. And I think we just got to go back to those basic principles of intentional connection with yourself, knowing what's really important. You know, in the way, Samina, you and I have forgotten who we are. You know, we become wives, we become mothers, we become physicians, we become daughters.
Yeah.
But who is Samina and what does Samina want to do? And once you honor that, the irritability will go, because you're actually doing something to fill up Samina's cup. And so I think along the way, that's what I find that helps me and my patients. Rather than, I think hormone it's obviously you need that. And especially at menopause. Yeah. You know, I always say there's a mismatch of life expectancy and what menopause happens. Menopause happens at 51.
Uh-huh.
And there's a mismatch of our reproductive lifespan, which is 51. But we live on till 90, 85, depending which life expectancy statistics you see. And we know that there is the biological, due to the decline of our hormones, there is chronic disease goes up, increased burden in that, and it accelerates aging. There is no argue that every organ in the body has an impact. It's it's a multi-organ transition. Every organ is suddenly lost estrogen, progesterone, not testosterone. That's been down for a while. And it panics, you know, it doesn't know what to do. And that's why you see these baseline cortisols go up and stress go up. Because the heart's like, hang on, I've lost my estrogen, blood pressure going up, cholesterol going up. The metabolism doesn't know what to do. The gut goes haywire. The brain goes. Mm-hmm. The ears start tinnitus. The mouth.
Don't you talk about the vagina, the urinary system, right?
Yeah. And then, you know, we all obsess with, you know, sexual intercourse, but we know it's really important for your recurrent bladder infections, for your thrush. So I think when the menopause is, there's no argue. You need all those three hormones and they'll help. But in the perimenopause, in your late 30s and 40s, a decade before, you've got to incorporate and change your nutrition, your movement, reduce your stress, which comes with boundaries, learning what's more important to you. What do I need to do to fill in my cup? My needs are not just going to be fulfilled as being a mother, a daughter and a wife. I need to honor what I need. And if you start doing that work, when you get to 50, those women find it's a lot more easier because they've done the work.
Yeah. No, that's great. I love that, actually. You just calmed me down a little bit. All of a sudden, I feel very calm to thinking about all the things you're saying.
Because I think it's knowing that it's a transition. It will come to an end. But I think knowing that you've got control over yourself and how you react, because at the moment we've been told we're relying on estrogen to control it. We're relying on progesterone to control it. They, of course, are going to help with those fluctuations and then buffer them. But you have so much more power through your everyday actions on what you eat, how you move, how you sleep, how you interact, how much you use that food and how much you Instagram stroll, you know? And I think those are just, you know, simple things, but very powerful tools.
Yeah. No, and I think that's why we always say it's not, there's no magic bullet here. You know, like estrogen, testosterone, progesterone, they're not like the magic combination that's going to cure you and help you. And I tell patients that all the time, it's part of the tool and the tools in the toolbox. But you have to do the work. You have to do the work.
You have to do the work. And I think at menopause, yes, of course, it will help with your symptoms dramatically.
Sure.
But perimenopause is very different. It's the impact of stress in your early 40s and perimenopause, it's going to be very different to when everything tanks at 50. I mean, we're saying obviously you can go through menopause much earlier as well. And I just think we need to understand the role of, you know, elevated cortisol. We know that chronic stress will suppress your testosterone, just like in men, you get an LH suppression, they reduce their testosterone, so they'll get all the symptoms. Similarly, in women, you get low testosterone and low progesterone, which then lead you to fatigue, insomnia, anxiety. So I think hopefully, I think if people are going to get anything from this, is just understanding that the perimenopause transition, the symptoms are completely different to menopause, and they're around low progesterone, low testosterone, and high cortisol levels. And addressing those really helps. And they kind of start 37, 38.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's because, you know, here you hear a lot, like, you know, patients will get told, like, oh, you're too young for that. You're too young for that. But that's just, obviously, the clinician doesn't have a broad scope of what their understanding is of this reproductive lifespan, really.
I think it's because the definition is you need to have a delayed your period for 7 days or less or more, some irregularity. But you and I see these women in our clinics. Obviously, you're seeing them with heavy menstrual bleeding. They obviously have their pelvic scan. I think that's the other thing we need to be mindful is that as much as hormones are to play, you must have a pelvic scan to exclude any other pathology.
Sure.
Gynecological pathology. And the other thing is hypothyroidism is very common.
Yeah.
You've got to make sure that that's being treated. And then you add in the hormones. I think if you focus a lot just on giving lots of estrogen and progesterone, it actually makes the whole thing worse. So currently, I'm finding everyone is coming on double, triple doses of estrogen. And then I'm pulling that back and adding in all the other things that we've talked about.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think that's a great note, actually, Fatima, to end on. But just one last piece of advice. Like, what is the advice you give to these perimenopausal women? Like, if you just had, I mean, you've given them a lot, but in terms of like that stress reduction, that cortisol reduction, because obviously, you know, hopefully they can find people to get prescriptions from and, you know, some guidance. But what would be your last thing to tell them?
I think you want to obviously correct any underlying medical cause. So if you're iron deficient, you must have an iron infusion or take iron. I mean, you know, anything, your ranges are different. So our ranges are between 30 to 300. And so you need to be over 100 for you to have good function when it comes to brain, perfusing the brain. And that's why a lot of the low iron are getting brain fog and restlessness.
That's true.
And I think we keep giving estrogen, but they're still running at suboptimal lower dose, lower range iron level. And it's something really basic, but we have an epidemic of iron deficiency, not anemia, but just low iron. And that's so easily corrected. Then I'm a big advocate of obviously adding in micronized progesterone and testosterone, because that will help with your fatigue, your insomnia, your anxiety. When we put that in, women will generally find they're coping a lot better. That's what I find. Yeah. I add in magnesium because that relaxes the body along with the glycinate component, which calms the mind. I get them to look at their gut as well, because obviously gut dysbiosis can also cause some anxiety. But we know there's a gut-brain connection. So when you're stressed, your gut gets affected. So, you know, kiwi food a day is great for prebiotic in the gut. And again, chronic stress will give you that increased intestinal permeability, which they call leaky gut. So a lot of it is driven around that. But when I find we get the iron up, give them micronized progesterone, give them testosterone with some magnesium, I add in vitamin D as well. And if they're not eating enough omega-3 fish oils, that helps them as well. Otherwise, eat sardines and mackerel. And that's where we start. And then they get like a crib sheet at the end, and they need to do 20, 30 minutes of resistance training 3 times a week. I just tell them 2 kg weights for the upper body, 5-10 for the lower body. Start with something. You don't need to go to a crazy gym workout. Do 15, 20 minutes at home, and then start planning your food. And then just be, keep your phone away. And I just want you to get a journal, read something, write something. Yeah. Those are really powerful things.
Yeah, I find gratitude journaling actually in and of itself is so powerful, right? Like you can really get caught up in so much of the negativity around the world and, you know, experiencing loss and all the things. But I've found like gratitude journaling has been very helpful.
Well, we have a negative bias. So if you just think about you've had a tough day, you know, your husband forgot to pick the kids up and the kid's not listening to you, the laundry's not done, then the brain thinks you're just worried and it gets stressed and it starts to pick up on everything negative because his job is to protect you. Mm-hmm. And the whole thing gratitude works by is it's suddenly you're focusing on more the important things. And if you look at it, most of us have so much like shelter, food, comfortable bed to sleep in, the fact that we have the opportunity to serve women, children.
Adults, our general health, you know, like it's such a gratitude.
Yeah. But I think you've got to do it, again, being intentional, you've got to do it every day. But we're so distracted. You know, I think attention is your biggest commodity at the moment, and trying to get back away from technology and phones obviously is something so you can spend more time. But that's what I would start. Adding an estrogen is very easy, and that's important to add in when it's needed. But the very early, late 30s, you need to focus on these things, and the people pleasing has to kind of go as well. But that happens when you learn more about yourself and who you are and what's important to you.
Yeah, absolutely. Amazing. I love all of that, actually. And I, you know, I try to incorporate that in my own practice as well with my patients. But I think you said it so eloquently. So I really appreciate that. All right. Well, that's great. I think, you know, this, we're almost at an hour, so I'm going to go ahead and end on that great note that you told everyone. And I really appreciate you being here today and joining us from the land down under. Well, thank you, Dr. Fatima Khan. Thanks for joining me today on Gyno Girl Presents Sex, Drugs, and Hormones. Remember, I'm here to educate so you could advocate for yourself. Please join me on the next episode.
If you have a second, please subscribe to this podcast. I'd love for you to be a follower and learn as much as you can about the things that we're going to talk about with all the people on our journey. Please review us on Apple or Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. These reviews really help. Review